A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Women Tech Charge. Subscribe and rate wherever you get your podcasts.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, liftoff.
Oh, that looks beautiful from here.
It has a stark beauty all its own. It's like much of the high desert of the United States.
Welcome to Women Tech Charge. My name's Anne-Marie Imafadon and I am your host. And today I'm joined by an intergalactic guest. She's not an alien, I think. Yeah, intergalactic suggests that she might be an alien, but she's not an alien. She's worked intergalactically. And her name is Rocket Woman, but her mum calls her Vanita Mawaha Medill.
The 2013 NASA astronaut class was actually 50% male, 50% female, which is really great. I printed out the NASA astronaut guidelines and I glued these to the inside cover of my secondary school folder. They said you needed a degree in biology, physics, maths. I worked on the European Robotic Arm, and that's a new robotic arm that's going to be launched to the space station next year, which is really exciting.
Welcome, Rocket Woman.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You are a space engineer.
Yes.
You've worked at places like the European Space Agency. Mm-hmm. You've worked all over the world. Why are you Rocket Woman?
Why Rocket Woman?
Yeah.
I think it just embodies a space in a whole and just the power that I think working in space and working with such amazing people brings to the role.
How did you get started with Rocket Women? When did you start Rocket Women? I don't even know if I know this, actually.
I started in 2012.
Okay.
So a few years ago now.
Yeah.
So I was really inspired by these amazing, accomplished women that I work with every day in my career. So especially someone like Sunita Williams. And she's a South Asian American astronaut. And so I think I was also really inspired by Sally Ride. And she said something really profound, that you can't be it if you can't see it. And I think that is just so inspiring and so very true. And so I started Rocket Women to really showcase these role models, to show the next generation that they could be astronauts. And the really exciting things that we're doing now is building up a new global team as well. We've got team members in India and Australia and the US and Canada and all throughout Europe. So that's really amazing to see that global impact that we can have, because space itself is such a global industry. And so
can anyone go to Rocket Women meetup then, or do you have to be in the space?
No, anyone can
space
come.
Professional.
Absolutely, anyone can
come. Be an aspiring space professional.
ideally, if you'd want to know more about space, you can definitely come along. We can help you out. I've always loved space since I was young. And so I was really inspired by Helen Sharman. And she's the first British astronaut. And so I remember being a six-year-old sitting in the library. So I found every book that I could about space. And I was reading through the stories of space shuttle astronauts and NASA missions. And I saw an image of a woman with brown hair in a spacesuit. And she had a British flag on the arm. And the caption next to it said that this is Helen Sharman and she's the first British astronaut.
I still dream about being in space sometimes. Although I have to say, most of the time I sleep so deeply that I don't remember most of my dreams. But when I do, I do remember a kind of a dream where I'm floating along the space station and then I stop by a window and one of the other astronauts joins me and we just stay there and look out. It feels like it was yesterday in some respects.
And even at such a young age for me in that moment, I knew what I wanted to do when I was older, and that was to be an astronaut. I wanted to be like Helen Sharman. So she really became a role model to me, even that, at a young age, and showed me that my dreams are possible. So it was really inspired.
She's super cool.
She
I really
is.
Like Helen.
She's
so chill. Like, she was the first Brit in space. She's been to space.
Right.
Shout out to you, Helen, if you're listening. I don't know,
she's
a
wonderful
person. But she goes to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a bit like, if I went to space, it would have been over for all of you. You wouldn't have heard anything else. Anyway, right. So Helen inspired
she
you.
She did, yes.
And so what was your journey to being the space engineer?
I think one of the biggest challenges for me, knowing that I wanted to do space, was knowing how to get into the space industry.
Okay.
And so the only thing I knew when I was younger was to be an astronaut, to get into space and to work in the industry. So I printed out the NASA astronaut guidelines and I glued these to the inside cover of my secondary school folder, which is a bit geeky. They said you needed a degree in biology, physics, maths, or engineering. And so I went to King's College London and I studied maths and physics with astrophysics there. So I started the course, and in the end, only three girls actually graduated from the course. So the boys decided. I think it was around six or seven it started. It was a small course, but three girls graduated from maths and physics with astrophysics that year. So I'm a space engineer, one works as an astrophysicist and in science communication, and then one is a teacher in London teaches physics to secondary school students, which is amazing. And so whilst I was at the King's College, I learned about this really great organisation called UK SEDS.
Okay.
And they're called the UK Students for the Exploration and Development of Space. So if you're interested in getting into the space industry, it's a great way to really get your foot in the door and learn more about the industry, especially in the UK. And it was really at UK SEDS that I met space engineers for the first time and met space professionals. And when I was there, I learned about this other university called the International Space University.
No way. Is it international in space, or?
Well, I think they want to create a campus in space, I think is their ultimate goal.
I think otherwise they're overselling it.
Right. So, but they're a really great university. And so a lot of people haven't heard about it, but they're based in Strasbourg in France.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they have a master's course there. So you can do master's in space science and engineering or business or biology, whatever you'd like to do. But they also have a summer course. So after I graduated, I went straight to do the 9-week space studies course they have during the summer.
Okay.
And that's really like an overall view of the space industry. So you learn about, learn from astronauts and space professionals and people working in commercial space flight. So you meet them day to day and learn from them. You have lectures from them and you do team projects.
So you have astronauts, you have space engineers. What are some of the other things that people may not have heard of or may not have considered? So I like this idea of space business.
Yeah, I think to work in the space industry, it's really important that you don't have to just be an engineer or a scientist. You can work in operations, or you can work in finance, or you can work in like social media or communications. And there's so many different avenues to work in the space industry.
So pretty much anyone listening, if you're like a lawyer, you could be a space
lawyer. You can absolutely be a space lawyer, yeah.
Space teacher.
Space teacher.
You're a space engineer. What do your parents think of this? Do they fully understand what you do?
I think they do at this point, hopefully, understand what I do to a degree. So I was really lucky. So I knew I wanted to work in space, and I was really, really passionate about it growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents took me to a science museum on weekends and to the National Space Centre in Leicester. Mm-hmm. And like while they were trudging behind me, they were doing something called increasing my science capital, which is like the exposure of especially young girls to science, both in school and also in their everyday lives. So it's like, could be anything like cooking as well at home, to talking to scientists and engineers outside of school, to meeting them at events like New Scientist Live and other communication events. So they're really supportive and encouraged me. But my parents, but also my teachers as well. So when I was in year seven, I told my physics teacher, Mr. Onaimi, and he said, I told him I wanted to work in NASA's mission control.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of laughing at me, he really supported and encouraged me. And then 12 years later, I was really lucky to work in Germany's answer to mission control in Cologne, where I supported operations on board the space station. So I think my parents and my teachers, I think, knew a bit about space. But I think coming especially from a South Asian background as well, I think one of the biggest challenges that I had was really persuading my parents that space and engineering was a successful career, especially for a girl to do growing up. So I actually originally applied for dentistry and then realised that was not what I wanted to do at all.
Although you could be a space dentist, right?
I could have been. Yeah.
It's not too late for you to be a space dentist.
It's not. But I worked as a dental nurse for a while as well, so I had that experience. Okay. But it was really helpful later on because I went on to work in like medical technology projects in the spacesuits, and having that medical background and that biology background was really useful in the work I do now as well.
So, tell me about that though, because skin suit is the big, is one of the big projects that you've done loads, is one of the big projects you've worked on.
When I was at the International Space University, part of the master's course there is an internship. And so I was lucky, I hunted for a spacesuit project, and most of them were at NASA and in the US. And if you're not a US citizen, it's really hard to work on spacesuits there. And I found one, luckily, at the European Space Agency in Germany. And so it's called the Gravitational Loading Countermeasure Skin Suit, or just skin suit. And what it does basically recreates the effect of gravity on the skeleton of an astronaut. So when an astronaut's in space, on board the space station, they're usually there for around 6 months. And in those 6 months, they lose 2 to 3% of their bone mass, and also their muscle mass.
Okay,
because they're not in a being exposed to gravity. Okay. And they also grow 4 to 6 centimeters in height. So Anne McLean, who is a NASA astronaut, she just came back from the space station. She grew about 5 centimeters, and that's really painful for them as well. If you imagine, like, kind of stretching out. So we created a suit that would help prevent that spinal elongation to help their spinal health, and also to help hopefully prevent that bone loss as well in space. So what it does, it essentially squeezes the astronauts from their shoulders all the way down to their feet in hundreds of stages.
Okay.
And to do that, we use something called a bidirectional elastic weave, just because of the material, so the tension in that material actually squeezes the astronaut and then recreates the effect of gravity on their skeleton to help prevent that bone mass, so that the bone loss. And so it's been used on board the space station, firstly by the Danish European Space Agency astronaut Anders Mogensen, which is really cool, and also recently by Thomas Pesquet, who's the French European Space Agency astronaut for 6 months. And it was so amazing to see the spacesuit eventually being used to help astronauts on board the space station.
Yeah, what's that like? Your baby is out there, you know, doing things in space.
It's like, it's the ultimate reward, I think, actually. And hopefully it will help to also other medical conditions on Earth as well. So hopefully there are hopefully ways that it can be kind of spun off and used on Earth as well.
So what other things, as a space operations engineer, I think you were as well, what other things have you ended up working on, have you developed, and where do your ideas normally come from for these things?
Yeah, I think they come from everywhere. So I try and keep up to date on tech as well. Mm-hmm. And so recently, we've working based at the European Space Agency for a contracting company called Terma. And so there I worked on the European robotic arm, and that's a new robotic arm that's going to be launched to the space station next year, which is really exciting.
Okay.
And so on the space station, there are essentially like a US side and the US segment, and then there's the Russian segment.
Okay.
And so on the US side, you've got the Canada arm, which you might have heard of, but on the Russian side, we're going to install a new European robotic arm, and that will help astronauts and cosmonauts carry out spacewalks and also install new parts of the space station as well.
And an example of this you could see in the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock, and she's basically sitting with her feet in one end of the arm while it's transporting her to, I can't remember, some ship or some station or some part of the station where she's performing some kind of work.
It'll firstly help to install new parts of the space station. So it's being launched alongside a brand new Russian science module to the space station. So that'll increase the science capacity. We're also looking at the space station, we're looking at tourism as well. So you could be a space tourist and buy a ticket to go to the space station if you really want to and you have the availability.
When can we first depart for that one?
I think
sometimes
next year.
I feel like I'm tired of this planet. We can go next year.
I think NASA's just opened up their side of the station as well to tourism. So you can even go off and film a movie on the space station if you really want to.
When are you going?
I'd like to go at some point. I think it's really exciting now, I think, for the public, because there are so many more commercial companies coming up. So there are opportunities through companies such as Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin, and they're sending the public to space through, I think, sometimes suborbital space flights as well. So it's basically when you don't go orbit around the Earth, but you actually experience microgravity.
Okay.
And then you come back down again. So I think that's really affordable.
Balloon things that we've seen.
Right. Also Balloon, which is a hot air balloon.
Time for a break. Send me a message using the hashtag Women Take Charge, and please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So things have moved on quite a lot then since the 60s, or since maybe when you were younger, or when Helen went up.
Yes.
In that there were all these things you had to do. There's the master's programs, the degrees,
right.
The training, the, you know, we all saw the BBC Two show. There's mm-hmm. like a lot. You have to mm-hmm. learn to swim, which I would have never even thought was a thing. I can't swim, so I guess I can't go unless I go as a tourist. How do we get to that point where normal people can just go to space?
By next year, Virgin Galactic are hoping to send their first flights to space with the public. So I think, and from that, there's other companies such as Balloon, which are based in Barcelona, and also Blue Origin as well. And there's a multitude of companies around the globe that are hoping to send out the public.
But will we need to go on a course to be able to holiday out
yeah.
there? Oh, you will. Okay.
You will. So I think if you go, so right now you can go. Mm-hmm. You can go with our Russian colleagues. And so you need to train somewhere called Star City, which is in Moscow. So I think around about a year or two,
so
depending on how long you want to go
for.
On to the space station at least. But if
wow.
you want to go on a suborbital mission, so with Virgin Galactic, or with a commercial company on a shorter mission, it's a much shorter period of time. So,
and how much does it cost? How much do I need to save?
I think so for Virgin Galactic, it's around 250,000.
So I have to save for a year.
Yeah.
While I train for a
you
year. So that's a really expensive holiday. That is a house. Maybe not
yeah.
in London at the moment. But that, yeah, it's basically a house.
But there are companies that are trying to create hotels as well in space.
Really?
Yeah, there's Axiom Space, which are trying to...
So if we don't have the hotels at the moment and you do get the ticket to go up, how long
yeah.
are you there? Are you up for?
So you're up for probably... So we have Soyuz capsules going up every few months right now to the space station. So the way they do that is they come back every around 3 months. And so you come stay for around just less than 2 weeks, maybe.
That's a holiday.
Potentially right
that's,
now.
That's
around,
like
yeah,
an actual holiday.
That's like a two-week holiday.
So how old do you need to be then to go on these things? You've turned into like space travel agent. Can you take a baby?
I would have to check. I don't think you can't take a baby.
Can you take a pregnant lady? Probably not, right?
No, I think you have to pass
anything.
Medical checks before you go.
Can you take a grandma?
Yeah, I think so. The average age of astronauts is around in your 40s or 50s. So, yeah, you can definitely go. I think the oldest astronaut that went was, I think he was around 70.
How far away do you think we are from having a baby, someone born in space?
I think we're quite far away. I think there's a lot of issues. So I think even to get to Mars, we'll need to look at the physiological impacts of going into deep space, and for radiation is a big problem right now.
Okay.
So we need to solve that as well. But also if you've watched, there's a Mars, which is like a program on National Geographic.
Mm.
So this came up in an episode of that recently as well. And so the problem is, if you were born on Mars, you wouldn't be able to ever really come back to Earth, because your body would be formed with that gravity in mind. And so it'd be an issue. So there's issues like that as well.
What? Say that
yeah.
again?
Well, it was in the program.
In Mars?
It would be a problem to come back to Earth, because you would be, I don't know the exact... and the physiology behind it, but I think it'd be an issue to come back just because of the gravity, the impact of Earth's gravity would have on your body and your skeleton.
You would literally be an alien.
You would. You'd be a Martian.
No, that's insane.
Yeah.
How much does Do things like sustainability play into what you're thinking?
I think when you're looking at Mars, it's something we need to think about, because there is a possibility for microbial life maybe on Mars. Maybe, but we haven't found any evidence of that. So we do have something called planetary protection. So when we send any probes or any missions to Mars that will land on the surface, they are very strictly controlled as to their cleanliness and what kind of bacteria that are on board. But when we go to the moon, we're definitely going back in a sustainable way. So we are currently planning, so the global space agencies, you've got NASA and ESA, are planning missions back to the moon. So with the Gateway, which is the new space station in lunar orbit, we're also going to send lunar landers. So Blue Origin have created a Blue Moon lander, and that's going to go back, and that will help cargo land on the surface of the moon. But we're also looking at using that water ice and those tons of water ice and also oxides as well to create propellant and to create hydrogen, oxygen, so we have propellant to go onwards to the moon, onwards to deep space and to Mars, but also as water we need for life as well, so for the astronauts.
This is the Women Tech Charge podcast. And so we're all about women that are taking charge in these spheres.
Yeah.
And you're taking charge in space. And so I think for me, so there's things like periods, or there's things like using the loo. They were sending a woman up to space and they were like, oh, well, if you're going to be there that long, then we need to send you up with sanitary towels.
Right.
How many do you need? Like 200? Mm-hmm. And she kind of looked at them and was like, what, have you never met anyone that's ever had a period? Like, what is that? But there's also things like not having space suits for women, and so the all female spacewalk that you wanted to do, you can't do because we didn't have any more in the small size, because when we made them originally, we didn't think we'd have as many small people, aka women.
Mm-hmm.
Sexism happens on Earth. If you take the humans to space, you're still going to have rubbish like that happening. Where do you see the most change that's available to have, or do you see any opportunities within all of this to make things better for the industry, for humankind? Like, it's a big question, I guess.
I think right now space is changing.
Okay.
So NASA in 2013, the 2013 NASA astronaut class was actually 50% male, 50% female, which is really great. Mm. And also that's the class that both Christina Cook and Jessica Meir, who were on board the space station, and they were in that class. The 2017 class had 5 girls out of 12 astronauts that were selected, and 2 of those were only 29 years old. So if you think about it, that's like 10 years between graduating from sixth form of college to becoming an astronaut, which is really cool, which isn't that much time.
That's pretty cool,
And a great example is Zena Cordman. And so when she was 29, she was doing her doctorate, and she didn't know if she could become an astronaut. And she knew that she had the science degree in her bachelor's, and she had a master's degree, and she was doing her doctorate. So she said she met the basic requirements to become an astronaut. Yeah. But she didn't know if she could actually make it. And so, but she applied anyway. She said this would be a really cool experience no matter what. And she became an astronaut out of 18,000 applicants that year that were chosen. So I think a great piece of advice from her as well is really to find your passion and really persevere, because you never know where you're going to end up. I think, and also following a passion is really, really important no matter whether it's in space or any other industry as well. I think that really shows. So I think if you really do what you're passionate about, you really enjoy it every day and actually do well at it as well. The NASA administrator recently said that it could be possible that the first 2 astronauts to go back to the moon could actually be 2 women.
What is next? What would you like to create or make?
Yeah. So next, I think I'd really love to work on outreach projects I'm doing right now.
Okay.
So I'm really passionate about that and work on Rocket Women. But I think what's really exciting for anyone getting into the space industry now is that there's a ramping up of interest to go back to the moon. And so right now, the European Space Agency is working with NASA and the Japanese Space Agency and the Canadian Space Agency, and they're developing a new space station which is going to be in orbit around the moon, and that's called the Gateway.
Okay.
And so it's going to be in highly elliptical orbit, and so by 2024 astronauts will be able to launch from using the Space Launch System, which is a new rocket that NASA are building, to go to the Gateway and be in lunar orbit. And then by 2024 NASA are aiming to land humans back on the surface of the moon. So they're aiming to land the first woman and the next man on the surface of the moon by 2024, and that's called the Artemis program.
2024.
Yeah. Okay. And so,
so we had the date for our diaries, really.
Yes. Yeah. So in the 60s, you had the Apollo program, and you had the Apollo generation that watched the Apollo missions and the Apollo astronauts launch to the moon and were so inspired by that. And that's trickled down to this day. But I think just this generation, we're calling it the Artemis generation. So we're the generation that will be inspired by these amazing achievements and also be able to work on these fantastic goals as well. And so I think, and Artemis is actually, in a Greek mythology, Apollo had a twin sister, and the twin sister was called Artemis, which is why NASA called it the Artemis program. Yeah.
And what kind of person do you think we need in the space industry?
I think we need everybody in the space industry. I think you need to also, it's really important to know that to work in the space industry, you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to, I think, especially like in engineering and science and the space industry. So it's good to know that there are those stereotypes of somebody that works there that is working in a hard hat and is in a lab coat, and it's not a solitary endeavor at all. Like, I think the best thing about working in the space industry is that it's so global in nature, and you get to travel and work with these amazing people from all around the world. So your team could be composed, especially at the European Space Agency, with someone from the UK and Canada and Romania and Italy, and so you've got these amazing cultural interests as well, and these cultural backgrounds that are going into these projects. So I think that's one of the best things about working there.
And you've had to learn all those a couple of those languages to be able to then work across space.
You learn words from languages, yeah.
So have intercultural understanding, maybe learn a couple of languages,
yeah.
And then add space on the beginning of your title.
You could do that.
And that's it.
I think you could definitely come and join the space industry and be a rocket woman.
Be a rocket woman who takes charge. Do you believe in aliens?
I believe there's probably something out there. I think the universe is just so vast and there's so many possibilities that I hope there is life out there.
Thank you so much, Anita.
Thank you.
That was so
thank
cool.
you, Emery.
Thank you for coming. Thanks for talking space. I learned a lot on that. I mean, not that I don't always learn a lot, but we learned a lot about space. And I think I'm ready to be a space demet. Or to be a space speaker, be a space podcast host.
You could do that.
We should record a podcast from space. Thank you very much, Vanita.
Thank you. Thanks, Emery.
This is Women Tech Charge. Subscribe and rate wherever you get your podcasts.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.